weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home.
Cambridge 105.
The Gadget Guide.
And we welcome Rob, Lawrence, and a guest as well.
Yes, good evening, Julian. And thank you to Nizar for joining us as well. Nizar comes from the company Virtual Arts Limited, which just launched in Cambridge this week. And we're going to be talking all things virtual reality, augmented reality, and all things along those lines in a few minutes' time. First of all, though, a quick look at what's happening in the rest of the world of technology. The first one is a death. Maybe we should mourn it, maybe we shouldn't. This is the Microsoft Windows Phone platform.
Has finally been cancelled, according to Microsoft.
Yes, there's a lovely graph here on ZDNet's website of the revenue from Microsoft's phone markets, peaking at about $2.6 billion back in 2015.
That's not bad. Not bad.
Pretty good. Dropping to $5 million. This time in Q3 of 2017. So that's the quarter we're about to head into. Basically zero. You can't even see the line on the bar graph, can you?
Yes, I think they've finally given up on that. And they're saying it's not necessarily Apple that's killed them. It's more Android. People wanting something other than Apple.
This is obviously an incredibly competitive market in the smartphone world. Apple and Android, iOS and Google's Android platform are the big ones. Lots of individual hardware vendors, of course, in the Android space, really taking the whole sweep of the market. Apple going for the more of the premium end of things. Microsoft, they had a valiant effort, didn't they? They came up with some nice devices.
They had good devices, good partnerships with manufacturers like
Sony,
Nokia and so on.
And
it generally worked pretty darn well. And also, if you were using a Windows PC, the interaction between the two, between your phone and your PC, was fantastic, and you could do things on your phone to effectively turn into a remote control for your PC and your Xbox and so on.
And maybe in a sense it was behind the time, and in a sense it was ahead of the time, because they were later to the market than Apple or Android. That gave them a very hard lead to catch up on. But at the same time, they went for an incredibly modern interface. It was what we now see with Windows 10.
Yep.
Back in the days of Windows 7, Windows 8, the tile-based interface, what became known as Metro, now just the Windows UI. A lot of people didn't get on with that at the time. A lot of people were unconvinced. Given a couple more years on, actually, it seems to have settled into the norm. Now a lot of Microsoft's web properties, if you use things like Office 365, look very much like Windows Phone did a couple of years back. So maybe it was too early or too late. I'm not sure which, maybe both.
And who knows where they'll go in the future. I mean, they have got a VR offering that we'll probably talk a little bit about later. But, you know, maybe phones will just become something that will be integrated into other devices and you'll just have some sort of display hovering in front of you somehow.
Of course, they're not ignoring the mobile market because they've got an incredibly successful product in the Microsoft Surface line. This is their tablet offering, which, unlike the iPad and, again, a lot of the Android tablets, takes a full-blown PC and puts it into tablet format.
And still runs a full-blown, effectively, Windows 10, so that all of your stuff works, all of your applications work, all of your files just work. There's no worrying about translating something across to a different system.
And suddenly this seems to have really found its niche in businesses where folks are in meetings a lot of the time, can just pick up their complete desktop PC, take it into a meeting. It feels like a notebook, a tablet, but at the same time it's got all of the office applications that they live in from day to day. But also, and this to me is really interesting, with graphic designers, with the Surface Studio, because they've got an incredibly attractive, both aesthetically and functionally, an incredibly attractive package that appeals to a market where Apple have traditionally held a very solid lead.
And Apple haven't really got an answer to those. So, yeah, Microsoft's still going to be the interesting one to watch, I think, for a good while.
Okay.
Other bits and pieces, and this is a transport solution that...
oh, do we get it in Cambridge?
I would love to see this sort of transport solution.
Just down the side of the A14.
I think it would answer a lot of the problems that we're having with transport in Cambridge. And this is the first successful test of the Hyperloop One in California.
Now, this is... or was Elon one of Elon Musk's companies? I think he spun it out, didn't he?
I think he's still involved in some way. I can't find any main details, but I think he's still quite involved.
Right.
And this is a maglev-type transport system, so magnetic levitation, but also in a reduced atmosphere tube.
So
you take out the air, which removes friction, which means you can push things through faster with less energy.
So this is combining the technology that you see in things like the Japanese bullet trains,
yep.
where you don't have any physical contact, you don't have any wheels on tracks,
yep.
and therefore you don't have a lot of the noise and the losses there.
Yep.
That lets you get them faster,
yep.
but then put it in a vacuum flask, put it in a thermos flask.
Yes.
And then you can go faster still. Top speeds of 700 mile an hour, I think I saw advertised.
Their aim is to ramp to 250 miles an hour on test before getting to 750 miles an hour.
And this means that you're basically going at the same speed as a jet aircraft
yep.
while still being on the ground.
Yep.
And with all the advantages of that, and presumably a lot lower fuel consumption, a lot
exactly.
lower energy cost.
Exactly. So it's going to be interesting to see where they get to. Apparently, first tests were quite successful, so that's all good.
This is happening out in the desert in the US somewhere.
Yes,
they've
built a test track that they've been testing, or a test tube.
Yes, and literally a test tube, yeah.
Other announcements, Google have announced something a bit closer to home. They're mm-hmm. building a data centre in London.
Now, this is part of their Google Compute platform. So this is Google's cloud offering. If you've heard of the likes of Microsoft Azure or Amazon Web Services, this is data centres that they're building and selling the capacity to other companies.
Interesting, if you talk to Google, they sell capacity on the platform that runs Google.com.
So yes, in the same way as Amazon
it
do.
Is still the same system that is running your Google search, that's running your YouTube, that's running your Gmail, but you can buy capacity on that as a business to actually use it to run your own jobs, to run your own web services, and do things online.
Now, this is interesting to see the extra data centers springing up, and Google have just announced its one in London. Amazon did the same thing about a year ago or so.
Yeah, theirs is just out towards Heathrow.
Yes, so they had for a long time, they had a data center over in Dublin, in the Republic of Ireland. Interesting, I think that we're seeing this as a result of, in part, of Brexit.
Yes.
Because
Companies saying, I don't want my data
exactly.
in Europe, or I can't have my data in Europe.
Exactly.
Well, you can have it in the UK.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of data sovereignty issues now coming up, and especially with things like the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulations, where the physical location that data stored is becoming super important.
And also, if you want stuff to be readily available and fast availability, so if you're doing things like trading stocks and foreign exchange,
you need very high
speed connectivity. So, yeah, things that are that critical. So it's interesting as to what they're doing. It'd be interesting to see what their pricing is like in comparison to the likes of Amazon and Azure and IBM and HP.
Mm, very good. Right, what else have we got going on?
We've got... have you read the terms and conditions of the Wi-Fi service you might have connected to in public?
No one reads the terms and conditions, surely.
So this is a UK provider called Purple who slipped in an extra clause into its terms and conditions, and no one noticed.
Okay.
For several weeks. Well, one person noticed.
Well, what
and
was it?
The T's and C's that they included were that you would agree to perform community service, doing things like cleaning local parks of animal waste, providing hugs to stray cats and dogs, and manually relieving sewer blockages.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
So presumably they now have a load of people who have agreed to this.
22,000 people have agreed to this. So it does...
I dare say maybe not an enforceable contract. If you don't highlight it up front.
They reckon that they probably could... But of course they're not going
yes,
to.
Yes.
But they did highlight the point that people don't read terms and conditions of online contracts effectively.
I do remember someone did an exercise a little while back of actually making a point for, I think it was 2 weeks, of reading the end user license agreement that you get with pieces of software and services,
yeah.
of reading that for every single service and piece of software they used for 2 weeks. And they basically got nothing done. they spent pretty much the entire 2 week reading legal documents and printing them out, and they ended up with an enormous stack of...
Last thing I'm just going to talk about, which we'll probably talk on the gadget guide, we can waffle about this evening because we'll have more time, and this is an interesting use of Google Glass, which was Google's foray into augmented reality.
Yes.
And this is using Google Glass to actually help blind people.
Okay.
Which is something... But, you know, blind people can't see. Why are you using a visual aid system? And it's because of the voice aids and the cameras in the systems can help people get around places. And I think we'll talk about it, like I said, a bit later this evening, because it's quite an interesting article about the way these sort of technologies can actually help people who have a disability like blindness and deafness and so on, and bring the world alive with different ways of showing them the world around them.
Ah, very good. Well, it's time for a quick bit of travel, but we'll be back in a few minutes and talking to Nizar about virtual arts.
I've discovered how old that song is. It's not a good thing. Virtual Insanity from Jamiroquai.
The Gadget Guide.
It's okay, it's only the same age as our interns at work, 21 years. There we go.
Thanks.
Welcome back to the Gadget Guide. And delighted to now be joined by Nizar. You're from Virtual Arts Limited, the brand new virtual reality startup in Cambridge.
Yes, indeed. Thanks a lot for inviting us. So, Nizar Ramdan, CEO of Virtual Arts, a newly created startup in Cambridge.
Okay, so first of all, let's just take a quick look back. Augmented reality, virtual reality, mixed reality. Take us through what those mean.
So virtual reality means literally that we replace the human field of view with a virtual one that is rendered or created, and that's done through wearing goggles. So lots of options. There are those that are based on smartphones, so you put your smartphone inside a headset, like the Gear VR from Samsung, or Cardboard from Google, or Daydream, and that allows you to basically see through totally virtual world. Augmented reality is when you use your smartphone or tablet, the camera, basically, in those devices, and we overlay virtual objects. So
I suppose the big one that has become very popular with that is Pokemon Go.
Absolutely.
And that was the one that really brought that sort of interaction with stuff in the real world to the masses.
Absolutely, yeah. Augmented reality appeared a few years ago, but never took off, and then Pokemon Go brought it back and gave it a big boost, and it's expected to become very, very big in the future.
Mm-hmm. And that's normally someone using something like a smartphone rather than a full virtual reality headset.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's where the term mixed reality came along. It's basically wearing a headset, a bit like virtual reality headsets, but then allowing you to see through and have objects, rendered objects added. So it's a bit like augmented reality, but you're wearing it through a headset.
So it's the best of both worlds.
Absolutely, and it's expected that mixed reality will be the ultimate probably use case where virtual reality and augmented reality merge, and that will allow you to either be in full virtual mode, so where everything is replaced with a virtual world, or back to augmented reality and you have objects overlaid to the real world.
Now, when you're seeing these sort of virtual objects on top of a real world, is that you're still watching a full digital display, some of which happens to be a camera image of real life, or is it literally mixing? So I remember, was it Google Glass, where you had a little heads-up display that it could add virtual objects to, but you could still physically see out of the front?
Or HoloLens from Microsoft.
Or HoloLens for the Microsoft.
Yeah, so the new generation of mixed reality headsets will use the latter. So it's the real world that you're seeing through the glasses, the headset, and there is a screen overlaid that will allow you to add the virtual objects. So you're seeing through your eyes, literally, the real world, and the virtual objects appear. And it's expected that these headsets will offer such high fidelity that the virtual objects will appear almost like if they are part of
the real world. You can't tell where one starts and the other ends. I can't help but think back to films like Minority Report and that sort of thing. And that is now becoming reality.
Yes.
Virtual. it is becoming something that's achievable with technology as it is now, isn't it?
Yes, I think where that movie appeared a few years ago, it was seen as science fiction and stuff that would not be seen before decades and decades.
Yeah. The other one was Paycheck, which had...
Yes.
They started with the premise of, you know, here's the screen and we're doing 3D. Let's take the screen away and our 3D just sits there in the middle of nothing.
So
holograms.
Virtual Arts Limited, the new kids on the block here in Cambridge.
Yes.
Where do you fit into this?
So we are a interactive content and technology developer. So we don't make the headsets. We're not a hardware company. We are a software company. So we make the content that goes on to these headsets, and we make the tools and technology that allows software developers to create such content.
Okay.
So you're sitting, if I'm correct, you're sitting between the likes of HTC, who make the Vive headset, and... You're working alongside game developers? Is that Is that fair?
Yes. So we sit between the developers and the hardware makers. So we are the software layer, the middleware layer in between for developers. But since we will be also making our content, there will be also developers ourselves, and then we'll be providing content, games, interactive experiences, okay, and also animated features to consumers.
Your people have come from the likes of Arm and from Sony's game studio in Cambridge, which dissolved last year, I think it was.
Yes, absolutely.
So you've got people who are used to writing games. You've got people who are used to the hardware. Are you going to be able to do a little bit of influencing of the hardware, do you think?
Yes, we hope to do so. So we have background in both. We have knowledge in both, and we expect to work with hardware vendors to give them feedback and also try to influence their roadmap and into what we think these devices should aim to achieve great experience for both virtual reality or mixed reality.
And what's Cambridge like as a city? We've of course got some very big names. Frontier is the obvious one up on the business bar. Is Cambridge a good place to be doing virtual reality and game development for a company like yourselves?
Yes, absolutely. Cambridge has an amazing pool of talent already. I mean, in virtual arts, we have people from Arm, but also Geomerics, which was a software company that Arm acquired, as well as experienced developers from Sony Guerrilla. There are also great companies in Arm, in Cambridge, and on the tech perspective, the Silicon Fen. Cambridge is home to the famous University of Cambridge, amazing university, mm-hmm, to produce talent. It's not far from London. It has everything to attract developers, to attract people, and we think in the long term it's very good for us to grow.
So I guess you're recruiting at the moment and also possibly building placement positions for university students who might want to take a year out and
we're actively hiring both experienced and graduate positions. We have openings, but we are open to speculative applications, and if there are the right candidates, then we'll be hiring them.
Cool.
So what does you've launched this week, you've just come back from the Develop conference down in Brighton.
That's
a big game development conference. What do the next few months look like for you and for the wider community, I guess?
Yeah, so, I mean, we announced the company, as you said, in Brighton at Develop, but we have been working for a few months already on a few products. So in the next few months, we'll be unveiling some of these products, both on the content front, but also the technology front.
And is that games, or is it other interactive media, or?
I think we'll announce in due course what the products are, right. But on the content front, we will be making games,
yeah,
interactive experiences, which are sort of interactive content, a bit like a game, but you're not necessarily playing, you're interacting, yeah, with the world, either learning or exploring. Mm. And also we have plans to do short animated features.
Oh, okay. But presumably immersive.
Everything, yes, yeah, everything immersive in virtual reality, augmented reality, and in the future, mixed reality.
Now, something I find a bit interesting here is that we had a rise or a resurgence of really of 3D films in the cinemas. I guess going back to Avatar and
Avatar was the first one who did it right.
Where was it? About 5 years ago, give or take.
Avatar was 2009.
Okay, 8 years, fine. Now I feel old. We had that resurgence there, and it was always a little bit sort of, yeah, the 3D glasses didn't quite work. They gave some people headaches. Your focal distance wasn't quite right. In the cinema, with that sort of technology, can virtual reality that we're now seeing with these headsets, can that do better? And can that actually expand the film market, do you think? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I think technically virtual reality is a step ahead compared to the 3D glasses. This has put a new really in the world, and when you wear virtual reality headsets, you think you are in that world. I mean, today maybe the resolution is not as good as human eye, so you realize it's not really real, or maybe the field of view is a bit restricted, but otherwise you have a very, very good experience. motion sickness is maybe one of the issues currently in virtual reality, but we think those will be fixed in the long term. And for movies, I think it will revitalize, if we can say, the animated sector more on the short kind of pieces front.
And I suppose if you can sort of do the multiple storyline type scenario.
Episodic, yes.
Yeah.
It's a bit back when, I mean, when I was a kid, there were lots of these animated features that we used to watch. I think kids nowadays watch more on YouTube, smaller or different things. Yeah. But virtual reality could bring these back, the nice. Episodic nice. Kind of exciting short animated features.
I guess we'll have to keep an eye on you guys and see what you're doing. Hopefully you'll come back and tell us a bit more about how the company's doing when you've got some products launched. And share them with us.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll be glad to come back and talk more about our products and what we're doing.
So, Gunn, if you were going to say there's one thing that's exciting you most about virtual reality at the moment, what would it be? Either that's just come out or that's about to hit the market. What's the most exciting development this year, do you reckon, of 2017?
I think it's really the proliferation of virtual reality everywhere, the content. Me personally, I think virtual reality is amazing because we will be able to experience as humans worlds that we won't be able to experience otherwise, either because it's impossible physically or because they happened maybe in the past that you can't witness those. Like events in the past, being a witness.
Or travelling to Mars.
Or something like that, which physically maybe is impossible or very, very hard to achieve.
Fantastic. Yeah. Nizar Ramdan, thank you so much for joining us from Virtual Arts Limited, and all the best for the new company as well.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.